You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
Final hour of the program here on a Tuesday with Faxon Childress and John Hyde on the Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in with us on the phone lines or Adams & Co. roofing text line. Texter gets in and says, help me understand something. With the SEC having player availability reports required, then why does Kirby Smart dance around injuries or players suspended like against Clemson last year? Well, last year was the first year that the SEC introduced their current structure, so that's for starters, and it was the first game of the season, so the parameters were a little bit different in the offseason subsequently leading up to the season. But the rules don't mean that the coaches can't do the dance. They're still going to do the dance.
The gamesmanship is not going to fully go away.
Yes, like Dabo does the dance. We heard it last year, and that's with Ross sending out those availability reports that become public 90 minutes before the game, which is, once again, what the respectable institutions do, and the rest of the ACC should follow suit, because Ross sets the standard, and the SEC, the Big Ten, the College Football Playoff, they set the standard as well in the same way. This is how it should be, for the integrity of the game and the convenience for everybody within the media, but to John's point, that doesn't mean you can't have some fun with the gamesmanship. That doesn't mean that you have to reveal all your secrets. There are still things that you can keep close to the chest. And guess what? In the SEC, you're allowed to list a player as questionable and give no clarity. That's essentially the same thing. You have your cop-out right in front of you. You just have to cop out in writing as questionable. So there are still ways to game the system, right? But it does create more integrity and a more realistic expectation of what's to come when you do it like the SEC did it. And there are so many things that I disagree with the SEC, and they're generally speaking insufferable fans on. This is one of the things that they get right. And there are things they get right. The ACC needs to follow suit with this structure because I feel like it's easier and more convenient for everybody involved. And that's kind of my final take on that. So I don't know if it's going to take away from the gamesmanship. I don't really think it will. I still think Dabo's going to go up there and troll with the day-to-day comments. And Chancey says he's still day-to-day. Dabo's hilarious, truly. The amount of times I've laughed in the press conference the last couple years is upwards of double digits. He's always got a quip or a one-liner or something that's going to get everybody going. Yeah, that's kind of my final take on this, John. Before we shift gears, is there anything else you have to add on the availability reports and everything along those lines? I've got another college football topic I want to bring to the table for you. So something innovative happened, but not necessarily in the way that you're thinking innovation. And we didn't cover this topic a lot in real time because I think that we both kind of agreed, let's wait until something actually happens before we cover this topic. The Wisconsin versus Miami tampering lawsuit has finally come to the table in the world of college football, and this is the first we have ever seen of any sort of legal action being taken over a college football player. And to be honest, I think there are some valid cases here. I think there are some very valid cases laying throughout this. Now, again, if I wanted to go into this profession and had a firm understanding of everything going on, I would have elected to be in a different career path right now, and I would not be talking to you. So I'm not going to act like a genius that has every single nuance and understanding of the law here. I'm just going to go based off of the public information and articles that are being provided to us as media members and try and put the pieces together to the best of our abilities. But essentially, the University of Wisconsin is suing the University of Miami, and they did on Friday, over alleged tampering and tortious interference of a two-year agreement with defensive back Xavier Lucas, a member of the Badgers 2024 team. Lucas is not mentioned by name in the lawsuit, only referred to as student-athlete A, but all of the details line up well after he left Wisconsin in January to join Miami's football program as the number one cornerback in the transfer portal. Wisconsin alleges that Miami intentionally interfered and tampered with Lucas's deal with the Badgers not long after he received a substantial payment from the school's collective following the deal's execution. Using CBS Sports and a couple other sources for this to try and put all the pieces together for this situation, but John, I have two questions for you. Number one, will this be the first and last lawsuit we see of this kind? Or number two, and I guess it's kind of a if or, is this something that's going to spark more lawsuits in the future for tampering?
In terms of the future, I'm not certain about that because we are entering the new era as of July 1st when the schools can offer contracts to the player. So I'm not sure how that's going to go from like a legal standpoint moving forward. I am fascinated to see with this, though, where are the legs? Like, how are you going to win this lawsuit if you were Wisconsin? Because guess what? You're not supposed to be doing multi-year contracts. Okay, well, bit of an issue there. And how is it enforceable when the school can't give the contract, when the school's doing the suing?
Also a good point.
I am fascinated to see how the courts rule this. I'm also curious, especially because the Big Ten is supporting Wisconsin in this. Is this just going to be something where the Big Ten, because it has more money than the ACC, just overfunds their legal team? Like, I am fascinated by this on so many different levels. Because I don't understand. Now, while we can say, yes, this is not great for the sport, and it's not, but I have no idea how the courts are going to decide about this. And I don't know, because it's through the third-party collective and things like that, I don't know how Wisconsin wins this lawsuit. But I do know that every single coach in the country is pulling for Wisconsin to win this lawsuit.
That's what I was going to say, is I have to feel like there's some level of unison amongst coaches and athletic directors here that's kind of undercover rooting for Wisconsin, because it could expedite. This is kind of where I'm at on this, okay? I'm not sure what's going to happen. But what this could do is expedite the process for parameters, and I'm in support of that. That's my big picture comment and analysis on this situation. I don't know how the lawsuit's going to work out, but a quote was given that I actually think is very interesting from Lucas's attorney on the situation. He says, "You can win the battle and lose the war." I actually think it's kind of the inverse here from the people that are in the camp of the school side of this thing. Even if you lose this specific lawsuit, this could get you closer to some structure to avoid tampering going forward. And I still don't think that the casual college football fan that isn't privy to really information or a behind-the-scenes look really understands the issues going on with tampering right now, or just how rampant it is. We are living in a world where we essentially just have open season free agency 365 days a year. That's what we're living in right now. So I'm in support of this if it gets us closer to a solution, is kind of where I'm at, John. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, with the lawsuit. I'm not sure I even understand all the jargon throughout all this article or what the technical case is behind it, and I'm not smart enough to understand that. But what I do know is that this could expedite the process for structures and parameters related to tampering in college football. And all in all, that would be a great thing for the sport. It would.
It would be, but I don't know if we will ever fully remove tampering. Because let's look at the professional sports. The NFL has a tampering window.
They do.
Like, it's always going to be a thing. And when we have agents and we have these, you know, athletes have like multi-party representation, like, I just don't know how we can fully ever stop tampering from happening, because we see it with coaches all the time. A coach never talks to a school that he's interested in directly until pretty much the very end. The agent does all the work, all the back channeling. Then the agent will report the conversations that they've had.
These agents,
but you're the middle person. And as these players are getting like legitimate entourages and like teams of people to help them in their process, I don't know how you ever like fully stop it, when we can't even stop it with a CBA in the NFL. We had to create a 3-day window when at 12:01 at midnight, we already have deals being announced in the NFL where there's protection around this. So I don't think you're ever going to fully stop it, because you have so many parts and pieces. You know, Texter gets in, we need a salary cap. Well, that's what the 20.5 of the House settlement is. But it's your salary cap of spending across all of your athletic teams and programs. There's just so much that needs to come out over the House settlement's implementation. Remember, we are a week out from that happening. On July 1st is when the new order of the schools directly paying the players begins. I still think we have a long way to go until we find some resolution on this and what it means for the future of the sport. But believe me, I will be following this one in court, because I just cannot wait to see how Wisconsin presents its case.
It was described as a calculated gamble from Wisconsin, and I respect it. Like, I understand that there's legal fees, and you're going to have to pay however much money it is to keep a lawyer on retainer for all this, but I think it might be worth it for, like, the overall big picture of college football as a whole, not even just Wisconsin. I think it might be worth it. This is a quote that was given from a former D1 college basketball coach, Mitch Gilliflin. He said, "I think a lawsuit of this magnitude certainly puts people on guard that the possibility of being sued or being a part of a lawsuit is a real thing." I think that this is a nice quote and point. Maybe this makes certain people pump the brakes out of paranoia. I know that might be a little bit of a stretch, but at this point, things are so out of control that I think I'm in support of anything that at least slows this down and gives the college football world a little bit of time to catch up and catch their breath. That's where I'm at on this right now. This thing needs to slow down. Texter gets in saying we need salary cap. Another texter saying we need to limit the portal or have one portal window. We can throw all of the above into what we need. But as of right now, these are the type of things we need to cling to if we want any sort of parity going forward in this sport. We need to hope Wisconsin wins this lawsuit. And we need to hope there's something from an infrastructure standpoint around tampering because, you know, John, in this CBS Sports article, Sonny Dykes gave a quote as well about saying, yeah, like, you know, you don't need to have speed limits if you're not going to write tickets, so let's not have a bunch of rules if you aren't going to be enforced. And I think that also, you know, is a valid point to assess in this situation given the context. So all in all, Wisconsin probably can't prove that Miami tampered. They're probably going to lose the lawsuit. I don't think that this is going to be one that they're going to win. But what it could do is put these guys that are the actual culprits of tampering around the country on a little bit more of a radar that they need to be more careful and maybe need to start doing it less. And then on top of that, maybe another school across the country sees this lawsuit that they're kind of utilizing as the guinea pig and says, okay, this is where, you know, the defense poked holes in their commentary in this original lawsuit that's the first of its kind. Let me take this lawsuit. How can I build on it with what I have against X school or X player? And then we're going to go to court with our legal team, and we're going to push for this thing. That's where my brain's at right now on this whole thing in totality, John.
The one part of this that this going to court worries me, and it is pointed out here within the article, is if Miami wins this lawsuit, this could signal to a lot of programs out there that tampering is fair game.
Yep.
That there are no rules. And that part worries me. That part very much worries me. Because if it is acknowledged by a court that these contracts aren't all that binding, and that tampering is fair game. Don't love what that says about the future of the sport and the uphill battle that the new College Sports Commission, the CSC, will be fighting in terms of enforcement. That's another part of this. It doesn't really say a ton in the article about it. But I think a lot of how this is ruled, along with several other lawsuits that are going to be happening here in the near future, is going to show how much teeth the CSC is actually going to have in terms of enforcement.
Yeah.
Worries me a little bit that we are restructuring, recreating, and that the conferences and athletic directors and presidents have created this commission that is supposed to run payments, supposed to run the whole new future of the sport. And if this is already... if they show that tampering is fair game and contracts don't really matter and there are no negative ramifications of this, then I worry that we just rebranded the NCAA to the CSC and still don't have anybody with any officiating power.
Yeah, and it's open season type of thing.
And can we continue open season?
Yeah.
Because it's already here.
It is.
Don't know how much more open season we could really have in this sport.
I have thoughts. I have thoughts, and I go Wisconsin, I guess, is kind of what my stance is here.
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody outside of people who work for Miami and who are fans of Miami are pulling for Wisconsin in this situation if you want to have structure, rules, and enforcement in the sport moving forward. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm reading through a couple more of these quotes, and I don't think Wisconsin is going to win based off of, again, I know nothing about the law, especially with like in the realm of this. And if I wanted to know, I would have gone to school for it. I went to school to do this on the radio. I don't I don't fully understand the whole breakdown that's being given as far as the jargon and language goes with some of the technicalities. Like, I can do my best to understand, John, but there are a lot of moving parts in this, just know that. And this is not something that I expect to be settled anytime soon. And this is also not something that I expect to be black and white with the answer. Like, I think we're probably going to end up somewhere in between with our answer from the courts. I don't really know what it's going to be, but we'll keep you in the loop throughout the course of the process. John, I have two articles that I had pulled from, you know, either this morning or yesterday. And Chad the Mailman, I'm sending out the bat signal because I want to shift gears to NFL and bring two things across your desk in this upcoming segment, starting off with the Chicago Bears. And we will be talking about other teams as well throughout this. So it starts out with a Caleb Williams quote. Caleb Williams on Ben Johnson. Our goal is to be here for a while. And he gives all of these quotes about wanting to break the toxic quarterback coach cycle in Chicago and, you know, being entrenched with the Bears. Says Ben Johnson is great, and it's not just Ben Johnson. We have a bunch of young staff and old staff, experience and new energy. It's been awesome. He uses choice words every day towards me. He's tough. I love him. We hang out in his office. We get lunch sometimes. We're building this bond and relationship to last a while. I know Bears fans, year after year or every other year, coaches and quarterbacks are in and out. Our goal is to be here for a while. And these quotes lead me to an article that I want to bring up, John, which is ranking the top 10 NFL offseasons in which the Chicago Bears are listed at number one. I want to give some pushback to them at number one. I want to talk through a couple of the other teams on this list in which I don't really necessarily agree with the fact that they had a great offseason, but I do want to discuss Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears and some of the commentary behind that headed into next season because it's the most tantalizing division in the sport with four really good teams, in my opinion. And let's face it, this is one of the biggest stories in the National Football League headed into next year. Ben Johnson was the most coveted guy on the head coach market, not just for a year, for 2 years. Declined three different teams to come coach Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears. He wanted this job. He sought out this job, which has been a suicide mission for every other coach for the better part of two decades. So let's unpack this in the upcoming segment here on The Roar. Talk some National Football League. Who had a great offseason and keep you in the loop with what's going on in the NFL world with Faxon and John here on The Roar. 654-ROAR if you want to get in.
Did you know the IRS is hiring thousands of new revenue officers, leading to more audits and levies? If you have outstanding taxes, these changes could bring added stress and trouble your way. Take action now before things get worse. Let David Green at Green Law Firm help you resolve your tax issues before the IRS comes knocking. Call Green Law Firm today at 864-271-7940. That's 864-271-7940. Or visit greenlaw.legal. Act now and enjoy peace of mind tomorrow.
Spring is a time of growth, but it can also reveal hidden problems beneath your home. Call Canty Foundation Specialist for a free inspection of the cracks in your walls, uneven floors, and sticking doors. These are signs you shouldn't ignore. Canty provides expert solutions to protect your home. Visit CantyCanFixIt.com or call 864-403-5263. Canty Foundation Specialists.
Canty Can Fix It.
Hey, 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 it's the Queen of Clean here at Royal Flush Toilet Rentals. Give us a call at 864-238-8800. We've got your portable toilet rentals, hand wash stations, luxury restroom toilet trailers, septic tank services, and holding tanks. So whenever you need to speak with the Queen of Clean, call Royal Flush at 864-238-8800.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber. One Tom Plumber.
I need a good plumber fast.
I always call One Tom Plumber.
One Tom what?
Here, dial the number one, then Tom Plumber. Or just tell your smartphone to call One Tom Plumber. They promise to be there in an hour.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber.
Discover the transformation your home deserves with East Main Furniture. Our selection ranges from cozy living room sets, sleek dining room tables, bedroom sets, all designed to make your space uniquely yours. And don't forget about our large inventory of Lazy Boy recliners at great prices. Quality, style, and affordability are our promises to you. So why wait? We have the new room you need. Visit us online at eastmainfurnitureeasley.com and start your home makeover today. Visit us at 829 East Main Street, Easley. East Main Furniture. where style meets savings.
Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products or compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want a boost in and out of the bedroom? Hims has you covered. Introducing a new 2-in-1 approach to level up your game. Tadalafil for better bedroom performance and zinc for testosterone support. Put it all together and you've got what you need to turn things all the way up. Getting started is simple. Just go to hims.com/radio to start your free online visit. Through Hims, you can access ED treatments including pills, chews, and more. 100% online. No office visits, no pharmacy lines. Just fill out a simple intake form and a licensed medical provider will determine if treatment's right for you. If prescribed, it ships free and discreetly to your door. Find affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
Need assistance with door and window projects? The Home Depot can help. From inspiration and materials to ordering and installation, our free Millwork virtual apron service can get you moving and doing. Plus, we speak Spanish too. Our associates can help you tackle complex jobs without you leaving the job site, saving you time and money. Call us at 1-833-HD-APRON or visit homedepot.com/MVA. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
It's summer. Time to enjoy long days, lazy nights, and great food. Because Uber Eats has deals all summer long. So, when hunger strikes, don't sweat it. Delicious deals are just a tap away on Uber Eats. Enjoy all your favorite grocery items delivered straight to you. Get ice cream, soda, and snacks from your favorite stores like Wegmans and CVS and make the most of every moment. Now that sounds like a good summer. Order now on Uber Eats. Terms apply. Product availability varies by region. See app for details.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HDTV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
105.5 and 97.5, we are The Roar, where every day is game day.
Welcome you back in, everybody. About half an hour remaining in the Tuesday edition of Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Height right here on the Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in with us on the phone lines or the Adams & Co. roofing text line. We've got NFL and Major League Baseball to talk about in the final half hour of the program, John. I do want to get to some of this Caleb Williams stuff and get to these NFL teams that had good off seasons. And I want to shift gears because ESPN just put out an article literally like a couple minutes back talking about the top 50 trade deadline candidates, and there is an Atlanta Brave in the top 12 listed. We'll run you through that as well. But first, let's get to the NFL stuff. So we gave you Caleb Williams' comments. You know, we mentioned pandering earlier in the program. It goes without saying that all these guys have the upper echelon access to media training, PR training. They're going to say the right things, especially in front of the camera. At least 99% of them are. And it's kind of up to you whether to take people genuine or not as a fan of a team. Now, with Chicago, a texter points out that every Bears quarterback and coach has said this for the last 20 years, and, you know, there might be some validity to that point. But, John, if there is ever a time to buy into Chicago Bears football, it feels like it's now. Yes? Like, you have the head coaching candidate that everybody in the National Football League wanted when he was on the cycle for two consecutive years. You have a quarterback that won the Heisman Trophy and went number one in the draft that really seemed to figure some things out even with incompetent coaching that was not telling him what to do in the film room last year. On top of that, your roster improved this offseason, and I know we deem the Bears a winner of every offseason, right? And it's something we've done as an NFL media world for the better part of a decade now. But there's more legitimacy to the improvement now, maybe more now than ever. I guess, I know we troll. I know we give Chad some crap on the text line because it's fun to riff at our guy, but what are your honest opinions as of right now on June 24th on the Chicago Bears and how this marriage between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams is going to work out? Because I am tentatively starting to buy into that, the fact that this thing maybe not be, I'm not sitting here saying they're going to win a Super Bowl together, but I do believe that stability is going to be present for Chicago with coach and QB for the first time in ages.
I tend to agree with that. I think the floor is being raised. But my biggest, I guess, hindrance as putting them as like a favorite in this division or things like that is I don't think Detroit, Minnesota, or even Green Bay got a lot worse. I think Detroit is going to be just fine replacing their coordinators. I know we agree to disagree on that one. And I still think Minnesota is as good as anybody in that division. And I don't think Green Bay has fallen off. So while I believe that the Chicago Bears have gotten better, while I like the hire that they made, I do like the acquisitions of Joe Tooney and Grady Jarrett and Jonah Jackson. I liked drafting Colston Loveland in the first round. I think that gives them a very interesting piece opposite Cole Kmet, because it's one thing the Bears love. They love their tight ends. I just don't know if you're going to see all the results that Bears fans hope to see in year one of this marriage. I still think there is growth that needs to be done.
Yes.
And until I see a drop-off from the other three teams in their division, I still don't have them near the top of it. Because I believe that Kevin O'Connell last year was able to drum up an offense around Sam Darnold, which makes you think he's going to be able to do so with J.J. McCarthy.
Right.
With Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and all the pieces that they have there. I'm still very high on the Detroit Lions. I think right now they are my favorite in the NFC in 2025. So I do think the Bears can push for a playoff spot. I think that they can make a push even, you know, definitely in a wild card scenario. But I just don't know if they have done enough in comparison with those other three teams in their division dropping off to where I now have them in a higher status in that division, if that makes sense.
Minnesota got better this offseason, which a lot of people are neglecting. Like, I think that's the best point you made throughout that, was the fact that a lot of people see the quarterback depart from a 14-win team and just automatically assume that regression is going to directly coincide with that. I'm not sure they get to 14 again, but I think they are a more complete football team right now than they were at any point last season, and a large part of that is what they added to the defense. We can talk about Darnold all we want. I don't think the gap between him and McCarthy is that big, and McCarthy clearly is younger, cheaper, with the higher upside. They made the right move. They played that situation perfectly. Seriously. They bled Darnold for all he was worth. They revived his career. They had a really good season. They fell short of their goals in the playoffs. They cut ties. Now their rookie is taking the reins with a year of experience within the system under his belt. Darnold gets paid, and everybody wins. That was seriously one of the best stories of last season. Everybody won. Vikings got better. They got back on track.
Except in the final game of the regular season, yeah. The Vikings did not win. they blew it down the stretch.
That was disastrous down the stretch, but Darnold still got paid, and they still are able to kind of cut bait for free, and they move forward to McCarthy, and they used a lot of that funding that they saved on their defense, and that leads me to my next point, John, which is that the Vikings are number three on this list of teams that had elite off seasons. I think they got a lot better. They invested into the offensive line. Ryan Kelly and Will Fries, you know, the article describes this as a massive overcorrect. I just think that this was the right move. Like, you can't win without offensive line. I get that it's a pretty penny, but look at how Carolina completely revitalized their unit, giving out two top dollar contracts. You got to pay somebody.
And as much as I love Grady Jarrett, give me the defensive tackle combination of Javon Hargrave and Jonathan Allen over the additions of Grady Jarrett and I can't pronounce his last name. O-D-E-Y-I-N-G-B-O.
Yeah.
I'm not going to butcher that. I don't want to be disrespectful. But I will take that combination that Minnesota signed over that in Chicago. Like, even in just comparing those two defensive tackle additions between those two teams, I think Minnesota's was better.
Hargrave had his ears pinned back on one of the best D-lines ever for Philly in 2022. Allen's been a staple in the NFC East for a decade. Experienced guys that have played in postseason big football games that are willing to get after it and trying to win a ring on a contender. That's exactly what you want. The Vikings are one of the best teams in football, and they got a lot better this offseason. There are a couple other names to hit throughout the course of this article, John. Like, the Panthers are at number six as a team that's improved. I agree with that, and I would have them at a little bit higher. This is one that I don't necessarily agree with, okay? I want to talk to you a little bit about a team that I think is being overrated headed into next year. And I think that there are other teams in the NFC that got better and, you know, significantly better than this team. And this doesn't, I don't have anything against this team, contrary to where it will lead you to believe as an Eagles fan. I see a lot of people saying that the Commanders got a lot better, and a crux of that argument is because of the acquisition of Deebo Samuel. Is this Eagles tinted glasses to say that that move didn't really move me in 2025? Like, I don't know what Deebo has in the tank, and I also don't know how close the Commanders are. When you look across the league and you look at how much better Minnesota got with Philly reloading and keeping a lot of their talent, like, are the Commanders a top three team in the NFC headed into this season?
I don't know about three, but I would have them a top five.
I agree with that. I still think
they have the best left tackle in football now to protect.
Yeah, Tunsil.
Tunsil, yeah, yeah. To protect Jaden Daniels. I think that it was smart to go pursue Deebo Samuel instead of Stephon Diggs.
I agree with
Based on what the personnel around that whole offense looks, you already have Terry McLaurin. I think Deebo Samuel is a great weapon to use opposite him. No, I am very high on what the Washington Commanders have done this offseason.
Okay, we're in a little bit of disagreement
there. Because I think that they've really helped build around their strengths, and I think they are doing everything they possibly can to make Daniels as successful as possible.
They're trying to maximize the rookie window, which is the smartest thing they could do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we just have to, once this is another agree to disagree. Yeah. I'm very high with what they have done this offseason. I don't think that it's – I mean, they went out and got another offensive tackle in round one in the draft.
They did.
To pair him with Tunsil. Like, you went – and the offensive line, I think, was one of the biggest hindrances of that team last year. They got a lot better. No, I am all in on what the Washington Commanders are doing right now.
I think they've got a good thing going.
But top three in the NFC, no, I don't see them as that, because you still have, like we were just talking about Minnesota, I still have Detroit near the top. You still have Philadelphia there. You know, but if you want to make an argument to within the top five of the NFC, I would definitely, you know, engage in that debate for sure. But I still believe that Minnesota, Detroit, Philadelphia, just at the top of my mind right now, we're ahead of them. But they are certainly in the best spot this franchise has been since Dan Snyder acquired the team.
Yeah. I want to talk about a couple more teams on the list and agree, disagree, and then we'll shift gears in the final segment to some Major League Baseball and go around the horn. The Colts were listed at number 8. I was high-ish on the Colts last year. They've legitimately, it feels like they've copy-pasted the same season in back-to-back years where they've had make-or-break games against the Texans that could have vaulted them into the division lead and the playoffs. And what did they do? They went out there and crapped the bed against the Texans again last year. So this is a do-or-die year for Steichen and for Chris Ballard. And it might not be super fair to Shane because this is only year 3, but when you hitch your wagon to your general manager like he has, Chris Ballard gets fired, you're firing the coach. It's really just as simple as that, and Chris Ballard's job is 100% on the line this year.
And just due to the passing of Jim Irsay, I really don't know what the future holds for Chris Ballard and Shane Steichen. I don't think this is going to be a very good football team. I think they're going to be a very bad football team this year. I think as we are praising the Minnesota Vikings for taking two of their starters off the offensive line, we have to ding the Indianapolis Colts for losing those two starters on their offensive line.
Yep.
Anthony Richardson is more consumed with being a rapper than he is a quarterback right now.
Also true.
Which means you have Daniel Jones. Cool. Neat. That ain't going to win a whole lot of football games.
No.
I don't want to try to render what the judgment will be on the front office and the staff there, because I'm not really sure how Jim Irsay's, I believe his children, are going to be taking over the franchise. We have no basis as to how they're going to operate.
That is a fair point that I didn't really think about.
So I don't really like what they've done this offseason. Like, I don't understand why they're on this list.
Yeah, that's what I was...
So there's not a positive name on here other than Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State, which I very much like the selection.
I just
don't see it. But in terms of trying to project like how this organization operates, I don't know if it's very fair. And I would just like to, at least in terms of like making a decision on what happens with Ballard and Steichen, I'd like to maybe press pause on that part of this conversation with them until we see a little bit more of how the Colts are planning on operating.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The Eagles are ranked at 9 on this list. The Browns were at 10, just to give the audience some reference. Bills were at 7, Panthers at 6, Commanders at 5, which we mentioned, the Broncos at 4, and the Pats at 2. I'm not sure I agree with the Patriots element of this, but Vrabel is a floor raiser, and they probably find their way to BS 8 wins this year, because that's what Mike Vrabel does, because Tennessee should have never fired him, and he's a really good coach. Before we shift gears in the final segment, John, one last team I did want to mention that I would have had on this list that I'm actually pretty floored was not on the list comes from Texter 130, who says, "I truly believe the Jags are going to shock some people. That's not the fan in me talking. I was fading the Jags since the beginning of the year last year, and a lot of y'all got mad at me for it. But I laid out my reasons. A lot of those ended up becoming true, and I think they made the right decisions this offseason. I am all in on Gladstone and Cohen as the future of this franchise with Trevor Lawrence. And I love the aggressive move to go get a franchise guy in Travis Hunter that's going to sell tickets, put butts in seats, sell jerseys, merchandise, and more. And he's dynamic. He gives you a reason to want to watch the games. And he gives Trevor Lawrence a big-time weapon that can also turn around and lock up your wide receiver one. Great pick. Love the aggression from Gladstone in his debut as the general manager. I don't understand how people are going to say, if we're doing a top 10 most improved team, how is Jacksonville not on that list after improving their roster at multiple positions and taking one of the most dynamic game changers that we've ever seen in college football in Travis Hunter? How are you putting the Colts, who lose multiple O-line starters, on this list over the Jags? That would be my only real qualm with the list. I also don't think that the Commanders got as much better. Maybe that's not the best way to frame it. I think the Panthers improved their roster more than the Commanders did. Like, I wouldn't have the Commanders as high on this list as 5 because they just made the NFC Championship game. So how much can you realistically improve? It's the same reason I wouldn't throw the Eagles in here. The Eagles didn't improve. The Eagles just won the Super Bowl and lost multiple key pieces. So how can you say they had a top 10 offseason? Like, there were just a couple inconsistencies there that I didn't necessarily agree with, but brother, I was selling all the Jag stock in the world last year, and I was praying for coaching changes even though I love my boy Doug. I don't think this is the year. I think you have the right people in charge for the first time in a while. And if you can't maximize this window with Gladstone and Cohen, I just don't know if it's going to happen in Jacksonville. So I think you have the right quarterback. I think you have the right position, skill position guys around him. And I think you have the right coach and GM. You got to go win football games. And let's face it, Trevor has to play better. I don't think all of this is on him, but for the number one pick, Trevor has to play better.
Well, as much as they are doing to aid Trevor Lawrence,
that's what I mean,
this offseason, yeah, yes, he does need to step his game up.
Like, this is the logical time with the coach that revitalized Baker's career and had him throw 40 TDs with a revamped wide receiver core. I don't think it's going to be in year one. I am monitoring next year as the year for the Jaguars. The season after this season is where you could really try and stride for contention, but I think you see some big-time steps in the right direction this year in Jacksonville, and you might be able to backdoor into the playoffs. I like their offseason as well, Texter. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to set the table with some trade deadline talk for Major League Baseball on the other side, and then go around the horn, as always, with Faxon and John. If you want to beat the buzzer in the final segment of the program, 654-ROAR is the number.
Sitting here again today with our good friend Gary Mahaffey of Insurance for Seniors and Disabled. Gary, listener asked, "Walt, I have a small business and wonder if Gary would like to work with our employees who are reaching retirement age, and if so, at what charge?"
Great and timely question, listener. We have just launched a new service this year doing exactly what you've asked. We will work with small to medium-sized companies who have people retiring and need our Medicare services. In addition to teaching them the Medicare ropes and how to access Medicare, I will call on my old HR background to support what the employer is doing through their retiree benefits package as well. And again, my charge, as always, is zero.
There you have it, listener. Give Gary a call today at 864-307-8484. Again, 864-307-8484. And as always, you will thank me later.
Whether it's cruising around the neighborhood or hanging out with friends at the tailgate, do it in style with a golf cart from Elite Custom Golf Carts. Let their friendly staff help you find the perfect ride for you and your family. Call today to ask about their free delivery to over 10 U.S. states and flat rate delivery to many more. Now with 3 locations, call or stop in and see what makes Elite Custom Golf Carts the Upstate's golf cart superstore. Visit them at EliteCustomGolfCarts.com. Proudly owned by a Clemson alumni. Go Tigers!
We're here with Eric Snyder of Snyder Tree Care. Eric, you need more people. Obviously, that's a good thing because the business is growing. But when someone comes to work for you, what do you hear from them about their work experience?
We're looking for team members who like to work outdoors and enjoy the culture of do the right thing. We're a company that's going to do right things for our employees, and then our employees do right things for the client and the community.
Leave it to Schneider Tree Care.
I'm Ryan Beasley. My office works with clients in all areas of state and federal criminal defense to include pre-arrest investigations, white-collar defense, as well as student conduct issues at colleges and universities. Our team works in courts across the state to include city court, magistrate court, state court, and federal court. Our responsive and proactive approach in all cases is relationship-driven, client-centric, and resolution-focused. We look forward to the opportunity to work with you. Please give us a call at 864-679-7777 or find us on the web at www.ryanbeasleylaw.com.
Hey Roar listeners, Morgan Coleman here. Spring is the busiest time of the year for real estate, so let's make sure you're prepared before you jump into the market. Whether it's your first time buying and selling or your 10th, schedule a meeting with me to ensure you're armed with the information you need. I take pride in the education I provide my clients and would be honored to do the same for you. If you're considering buying or selling, let's chat. Call me at 864-313-7639 or search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to get started.
Hi, friends. Mickey Plowler here. A great Wednesday show planned for you. 6 to 9 a.m. for the Mickey Plowler Show right here on The Roar. Dane Young, UGA.Rivals.com. We're going to talk some Georgia football with him. Andrew Oliphant, Director of Instruction at Katichi. We'll talk some golf and PGA Tour with him. And a new segment, Win Game Wednesday. You text in, you call in any college football team. We'll give you the Win Game Wednesday every single Wednesday till football season. That's 6 to 9 a.m. Wednesday right here for the Mickey Plowler Show on The Roar.
The lake, sunscreen, a cold beverage, and the Roar. All the essentials to help you get through the summer heat. We are the Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Final segment of the program with Faxon and John on a Tuesday. You're listening to Faxon Sports on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in on the phone lines or the Adams Co-Roofing text line and beat the buzzer. And John, your show in the final segment, brother, around the horn time, and I think we're going to start with some MLB trade deadline.
Yeah, so an interesting article came out earlier this morning on ESPN.com ranking the top 50 trade deadline candidates in Major League Baseball. A reminder, the players are ranked by value for their new team if they were traded, not necessarily the likelihood of being dealt. One of my main takeaways when combing over this article is, boy, ESPN really projects the Boston Red Sox and the Arizona Diamondbacks to just absolutely sell anybody with a pulse on their team.
The Diamondbacks should be blowing it up after Corbin Carroll broke his wrist. They have no reason to try and win games for the foreseeable future as far as this season goes. Corbin Burns is down to Tommy John. Gallen's a shell of himself. Puck's been hurt all year. And now your best player and franchise cornerstone's on the IL for 3 months. Pack it up and go home, brother. We'll see you next year.
Yeah, players listed here for the Diamondbacks, Suarez at third base, Gallen the starting pitcher, Kelly the starting pitcher, Naylor at first base. Keep scrolling down because I know there are multiple. I apologize, this is horrible radio. But yeah, you have about five more players here in this list from Arizona. A lot of these guys near the top. But the thing that shocked me the most was at the top of this list, we did a lot of discussion on here at the beginning part of the Major League Baseball season with the drama in Boston between Rafael Devers and Alex Bregman and the usage of Devers from the front office when you have him under contract for the next decade about will he play third, will he DH, will he play first, and all this. And all this whole issue was forced because they signed Alex Bregman, the number one player on this list to be traded, is Alex Bregman. What in the world is going on in Boston that you send off Devers for, as you said, Faxon, a horrible return?
Yeah, it's a terrible return.
And so now you are willing to put up Alex Bregman, the man who you brought in that caused all of that dysfunction. Now you're going to flip him for prospects? Makes no sense. Number two on this list, Jarren Duran, outfielder of the Boston Red Sox. apparently there's about to be a fire sale in Boston.
I mean, you've got... Your ownership's trying to cut costs, and they've, like, tried to deny that, but it's pretty undeniable based off what they've done. You've got the kids coming up, right? You've got Anthony coming up. You've got Marcelo coming up. Costas has already, like, blew out his knee or whatever earlier in the season, and you're trying to get him back for next year at this point. I don't really see the incentive for Boston to try and win. And I know that sounds crazy. I'm not suggesting that they should just completely abandon ship on Bregman. In fact, I think they should probably probably hold on to Bregman for another year and try and win it back next year.
You just made this move, yeah.
Yeah, like you just made the move. That seems a little bit quick to jump ship. With Durant, I think it's a little bit different of a conversation. I think you are in a much more flexible position to move Durant because Roman Anthony just came up, right? So you've got a corner outfielder that you feel confident in as part of your future. You also have a couple guys in the back end of your bullpen that you can barter with, like an Aroldis Chapman, who admittedly I forgot was on the Red Sox until I started watching their game the other day, and I was like, oh yeah, that's where he is, but they're irrelevant. That's why I haven't heard his name this season. They also went in on Walker Buehler, who's had injury issues. Yeah, he's still kicking around and playing for Boston out from LA a couple years back. So, like, you have pieces to move. I think it would be the wrong move to trade Alex Bregman, John. I'm not sure I'm in support of that.
Right, no, and a texter got in and say, all right, let's be fair here, John. You probably play better defense at third than Devers. I don't think you can blame the Sox for getting Bregman. One, hilarious point that you think I can play baseball. Two, that's like my whole point.
Yeah.
Why in the world did you do all of this? Create all of this dysfunction in your clubhouse to bring in a very quality player in Alex Bregman, to then just ship him off in the halfway through the first season. It just makes no sense. I just don't understand the logic of the front office, and we have a Boston fan checking in on the Adams Co-Roofing text line. Boston fan here, makes no sense to trade Bregman or Duran. Side them and get some relievers, and they need to win. One game back a wild card and only six back a first, so don't need to sell.
I don't disagree with that element of it. Yeah, I think that you're still in the playoff picture, and I wouldn't trade out of the two listed. I would be more willing to barter with, or the four listed rather, Walker Buehler is somebody that I probably would be looking to move regardless, even if it's for like an exchange type of move where you can get some value in return. You don't need to trade Bregman, and I don't think you should trade Aroldis Chapman. I think we're in agreement there. Duran is the one that I would push back a little bit, but I do get why Boston fans would not want to trade him. If I were a Boston fan, I probably wouldn't want to trade the guy either. I still think he's a pretty darn good player that's got a pretty... I think he's got value, like, across the league. Like, I think if they showcase that they were shopping Duran, they would have their phone ringing from seven or eight teams looking for his services, John. And you want to know who I think one of them would be? I think the Atlanta Braves would call.
For Duran?
Yeah. I think the Braves would 100% call
potentially,
for Duran.
Depending on what Boston wants in return.
Yeah. Like,
but I think they would inquire.
I think they would inquire. But that, yeah, I don't think that the Red Sox, maybe I misspoke by saying that they've got no reason to win. With the expanded wild card, you know, the name of the game in Major League Baseball has changed for the indefinite future. Like, the Minnesota Twins are sitting here at 37-41. They're technically only 3.5 games back of a wild card spot right now. Now, you can look at the fact that they're 1-9 in their last 10 on a 4-game skid and -19 in the run differential, and you're like, yeah, this team reeks. But guess what? Since 7 teams make the playoffs from each league now, you're never necessarily out of it, right? So, 6 teams, rather. I just think that you're in a position right now, if you're Boston, where look at this, look at the wild card. Go to American League and look at the wild card. Like, look at this, man. This is just a complete, and yes, John, you can play better at third base than Devers is what Texas
No, I'm said. Laughing at the fact that with the Braves need to be buyers, the Twins need to be sellers, and the Twins have a better record by one game than the Braves.
They do. The Braves, listen, when you look at both wild card pictures right now, the Braves are the unfortunate casualty of playing in the superior league related to the wild card competition. It is what it is. But look at the AL wild card picture, John, okay? All of these guys are jam-packed in here like sardines, and really the Orioles aren't even technically out of it yet. You have the Rays, who are 2.5 up on the Mariners, who hold the third spot at 40-37. The Blue Jays are in your two hole at 41-36. You then have the following 6 teams, all within 3 games of each other: Guardians, Red Sox, Angels, Royals, Tigers, and Twins, Rangers and Twins, not the Tigers. You have 6 teams that are currently within 3 games of each other, vying for 3 wild card spots that are already held down. So you have 9 teams in total within 5 games of each other in this wild card race. Think about that. So what do you do? Like, this is a genuine question and just kind of thinking out loud here in the final segment on a Tuesday. What do you do if you're any of these teams? Because we've got a Red Sox fan getting in. You're competing against eight other teams for three spots.
I think you wait about another, you know, month or so before you make a decision. Real quick, I want to bring up here, you know, the Atlanta Braves are the focus here at our station, and understandably so. We are a proud affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. We have had lots of conversations about the Atlanta Braves every single day for the last couple of months. And one of the things that we get all the time on the Adams & Co. roofing text line is all the pieces that the Braves need to move on from. It's time to trade Murphy. It's time to trade Albies. We have to trade, oh gosh, I mean, who hasn't been named? Every bullpen pitcher has been named that it's time to go. Out of the 50 players named here, the thing that I found interesting about Atlanta, the only player that they put on here that should be moved is Marcell Ozuna. And the other part I find interesting about the Braves is the only players that they are listed tagged in that would be a good fit for are bullpen pitchers. So I find it very interesting that baseball insiders and Braves fans are split on that regard. I think Jeff Passan's pretty plugged in.
This is what I'll say, okay? I know that the Murphy thing has caused a lot of controversy, you know, within the fan base throughout the last couple of seasons. I tend to side more with keeping Sean Murphy because I don't ever think that having two good catchers is a bad thing. I understand the sentiment and the takeaway, which is, hey, we have a bad middle infield. We have a surplus at one position. Why don't we barter one of the players at our surplus position for a position where we are bad? And guess what? I'm not here to tell you that your logic is wrong. I think your logic is correct. And I think that a lot of that makes sense. But it's not as black and white as that to me, John. Like, this isn't just a, we have two good catchers, we have bad shortstop and second baseman, make trade. That's not what this is. You have to account for the valuations of the contracts. You have to account for the length of the contracts. You have to account to the value that they're adding to this baseball team on a game-to-game basis. And with Sean Murphy is currently on a six-year, $73 million deal with a $15 million commitment for each of the next three seasons, and then a club option for a $15 million commitment in 2029. And what did we hear from Alex Anthopoulos directly on 680 The Fan less than a week ago? Quote, we're not trading anybody that's locked up long-term with club control. Murphy is both locked up long-term and extreme club control with a club option on the back end of the contract. You're not committing $45 million to this guy over the next 3 years unless you firmly believe when acquiring him and throughout that process that he is a part of your future. I think that the Braves front office views Murphy as a foundational piece. I could be wrong. I don't necessarily disagree with all the people that think that the Braves need to trade him. I am more on the trade Murphy train right now than I have ever been. And while I don't believe the logic to be as simple as many believe it to be, I think that there is validity to the argument that it could benefit the Braves in the short and the long term to trade him. But I don't think that's an easy player to trade because of the contract, because of the long-term look at it, John. And then on top of that, you have to find somebody that has a need. That's another element to this is Braves fans want to trade everybody 24/7. That's not how life works. Somebody has to need a catcher for you to trade a catcher. Somebody has to be willing to give you a player of a position of need in return for that catcher. So that leads me to the question of how many Major League Baseball teams realistically are in the position financially and logically to trade for a catcher, and they have a good enough middle infielder that they're willing to exchange for that catcher that the Braves would be interested in.
Right.
And that dwindles down your pool to probably two or three teams in the whole league. And guess what? You pick up the phone and you say, I want insert middle infielder here. Yeah, he's untouchable. That's the end of the conversation, and you can't trade him at that point.
Real quick, I want to get Ted in here before the end of the program, but at 43 on this list, because Alex Anthopoulos loves to play the hits. Starting pitcher for the Washington Nationals, Michael Soroka.
I let me just make a prediction right now. The Braves are going to trade for Charlie Morton back. Let's go to Ted. We got like 90 seconds left in the show. Ted, sorry to give you such little time, brother.
No, I was busy all morning. Look, great way to get things started yesterday with a win against the Mets. Anytime you went up in New York, it's just like sweetness in a bottle. But, hey, listen, all jokes aside, you know, if they could trade Ozuna and then all they got to do is platoon Baldwin and Murphy in the DH. One catches, one DHs,
yep.
Swap them out.
Yep.
I mean, that makes the most sense of anything if you got somebody that wants to pick up a power bat. Now, I will say that Ozuna is part of the mojo of this team, though. So I don't know how that's going to change things. But, yeah, trust in Anthopoulos. He doesn't – he hasn't really hurt us bad, and his moves will pay off in the end. I have faith. Have a good one, guys.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, Ted. Appreciate you, brother. 654-ROAR is the number, as always, for Kwok and Ben, who will be up next with Out of Bounds. But, John, with 60 seconds before we get out of here, I love that from Ted. I think if there's a play – I've said this the whole time – if there's a player the Braves are going to trade, it's going to be Marcell Ozuna. You can set up that platoon of catcher DH, which I think could be mega efficient. It could help lengthen your lineup. You still need a middle infielder at the end of the day. That's the number one need for the Bravos right now. And you probably need one more arm with the rotation with Sale's injury and one more bullpen piece. Anything else to add, John, before we get out of here?
Reminder, we will join pregame in progress tonight, the conclusion of Road Rage with a 7:10 first pitch.
That's my bold prediction. I kid you not, Texter gets in and says, if the Braves trade for Charlie Morton, I may never watch the Braves baseball team again. I think the Braves are going to trade for Charlie Morton. I'll walk that out a little bit tomorrow, and I'll give you some numbers with how good he's been as of late. Kwok and Ben up next with Out of Bounds. See you tomorrow at 9, everybody.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM.